Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA over at FanRag Sports and College Buckets at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, Bulls writer and NBA at FanRag Sports and the host of the 312 show on 1590 WCGO here in Chicago. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. 331-979-1369. If you want to interact with the show, you've got questions, comments, you want to leave us a voicemail, hit us up there at 331-979-1369. Wherever you're listening to the show, whenever you're listening to the show, interact with us. We've been getting a ton of questions. Our mailbag segment, I feel like every week, has been getting stronger and stronger thanks to you guys. So continue to send us all of your questions, your voicemails as well, and we will continue to play those and answer all of those on the show. So once again, 331-979-1369. Save that number in your phone as Locked On Bulls. Matt, what's going on? How are you? Happy Friday to you. I got to say this to start off our show. I told Pacers fans this. I've got some buddies that are Pacers fans, and just from being down there at school, and I covered the Pacers for a year with an internship. So I've got a couple connections, and I like told them, I said, you went up 2-1. Don't get too excited. As Bulls fans, we know how this story goes, especially against LeBron James. And what did he do? Once again, hits a game winner to go up 3-2.
And with 3 seconds left, Cleveland triggers in. James, 2 seconds, 1 second for the win. Oh! LeBron James delivers. For number 23.
How you doing? What did you think of that shot? And are you surprised even in the littlest bit?
No, not at all. I don't know if you saw that video that went viral online of that little kid who was watching that final play. And as soon as he saw LeBron get the shot off, he turned around away from the TV, called game, and like walked out of frame. Laughing my ass off. I showed it to a buddy and he was like, I wonder if that's actually, if that happened in real time or if that was a recording, because it came out a while after the game ended and maybe it was DVR and so they kind of like staged that. I thought it was real, maybe just because I thought it was so awesome. But I, along with I'm pretty sure everybody in the world, was like, all right, well, so regardless of the stuff, and like there's so many people were complaining about the goaltend not called. The last 2 minute report came out. Okay, yeah, probably should have been a goaltend, but the Cavs also got screwed out of a possession, like the possession before that, with that weird like ball bouncing right there on the baseline.
True.
So, and even if they are down two, LeBron could still take that three and make that three and still win the game. So, I was not at all surprised that LeBron was the one to take that shot. It was very similar to the game winner he hit against Orlando in 2009 in the playoffs. And, you know he was going to take that. He loves that shot where he is, you know, going left, fading left from the top of the arc there. And he nailed it. And to me, if you're talking about looking back to that series in 2015, the Bulls, Cavs, and the conference semis, obviously brought back some painful memories, similar situation. Of course, that one LeBron took from the corner, and every Bulls fan was dreading him making that, and he did. But to me, you know, you were saying you warned your Pacers fan friends, just because you're up 2-1, we all know how this plays out, don't get too excited. Even though that Bulls team was Derek and Jimmy and, you know, a lot of awesome things happening, and we all felt strongly about our chances to take down Cleveland in that series, I think this Pacers team had, from start to finish, a better shot, because this Cavs team is a mess. That was actually a pretty good Cavs team in 2015. This Cavs team is LeBron and Kyle Korver has been the second best player on the Cavs in this series, which, no offense to him, is saying something. So I think when you look at how poorly Oladipo has shot the ball over the last three games, like, the last three games have gone down to the wire. The Pacers have had every opportunity to be up 3-1 in this series, have won this series already. And you're right. I mean, credit to LeBron for hitting another big shot. But I think that the Pacers are shooting themselves in the foot even more than Bulls fans 3 years ago, because putting the fact that the Pacers are a huge underdog, nobody even expected them to be in the playoffs at all, I thought they had a better shot to beat Cleveland this year than the Bulls did 3 years
ago. I'm with you, too. I think that team that the Bulls had to face off of again in 2015, obviously a better put together Cavaliers team than maybe what's going on the court right now. Obviously, one of the sticking points is they had Kyrie Irving. LeBron is going to do LeBron. And I think any Pacers fans, I feel bad for the people that were at that game, because it's like 95-95. The Pacers or the Cavaliers have the ball at the end. It's almost like storybook. You know what's going to happen. So I feel bad for anybody that was at that game that wasn't a Cavaliers fan. I think you're right, too. It's just incredible that even with the discourse of this Cavaliers team and with the way that LeBron James had been so frustrated, especially just even if you look at this series alone, how frustrated he was with his team. But like you were saying, LeBron is putting this entire team on his shoulders and trying to power them through this first round. They're getting a little bit more production from some of the guys that they needed to step up, J.R. Smith, and like you had pointed out, Kyle Korver as well, because they're not getting production from the younger guys that they traded for at the deadline, or at least not the production that maybe LeBron James is used to. So I think in that facet, the comparison to 2015 too, and it's like too, I think that Derrick Rose shot was really, that was like the last highlight, and I still tell people that that was like one of my favorite highlights from Derrick Rose's entire career, like even besides the MVP year, just the nuance and the story of him coming back in that playoff series and then hitting a game winner to bank it off the three, like a fadeaway like that. One of the best shots of all time, but then LeBron coming and crushing us in, what was that, game four? Yeah, game four of that series.
Yeah, it was game four.
So, I mean, LeBron's going to do LeBron. Overall, though, Matt, to just kind of wrap up this entire first round of the playoffs, I know we still got some playoffs going on, but as we lead into the weekend, more of these series are going to come to a close, and next week we're going to start the second round. Any surprises for you in this NBA playoffs so far in this first round? What have you made of this first round so far?
I think it's been already a much better, more entertaining first round than last year. I mean, by a wide margin, it's been more entertaining. We did have a sweep, but that in itself was entertaining because nobody saw it coming, right? Nobody saw the Pelicans winning four straight against the Blazers. So even in a sweep, that series was fun to watch. And you saw Anthony Davis do wonderful things. We got playoff Rondo, Nico's balling out, all that great stuff. Jrue Holiday, a big story in the first round. And then outside of that, nobody really expected the Wolves to put up much of a fight against Houston. But from the Bulls fan perspective, we got a fun little mini Derrick Rose reunion party because he played well. Nobody really expected the Spurs to put up a big fight against Golden State. So those two series go 4-1. Not many surprises there. But I just look tonight on deck, we got three game sixes at 3-2. Raptors, Wizards, Cavs, Pacers, Jazz, Thunder. I'm really excited to see what we have with Jazz Thunder tonight. If the Thunder can force a game seven with another big night from Westbrook and Paul George, or if the Thunder cave and the Jazz, you know, finally put their foot down, because really they had the series wrapped up in game five and they coughed it up. So, and we also, because of last night, Bucks getting it done in Milwaukee, have at least one game seven guaranteed. And that's the best part of NBA playoffs, right? Game sevens. So no bigs. I would say the Pelicans sweeping is probably the biggest surprise of this first round. And then maybe Second to that is the Pacers giving the Cavs this much trouble in a first-round series.
Even if the Pacers lose this series, I feel like this is a fantastic stepping stone for them as an organization, as a team. Like, what Victor Oladipo has been able to do with that Pacers team has been electric for this first round. And so I would say that, like you said, they're one of the biggest surprises, I think. Even if they lose this series, still a big surprise. I would probably point at the Bucks too, and the way Giannis has been able to sort of combat some of the early struggles in this series against this Boston Celtics team. And it was one of those things, too, like without Gordon Hayward, without Kyrie Irving, at the beginning of the series, without Marcus Smart as well, like a lot of people, I think, around the league were thinking, all right, this Bucks team should upset the Celtics team, and the Celtics are continue to battling back. And so I think another thing to point out on the Celtics team is we talked about how these rookies should be getting some experience, and it was good, even if the Celtics do find themselves bounced out after the first round. Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum have played really well in this series. It's hard to stop a guy like Giannis, too, especially when he's carrying his team like he did last night. Very interested for Game 7 this weekend, though. So I think you're right, though, about the Pelicans team. I think that was another really big surprise, and that's going to be one of my favorite matchups going into the second round, is that Pelicans-Warriors series. I think that's another storyline, too. I touched on it briefly earlier this week, but the low-keyness of the Golden State Warriors in the first round. You know what I'm saying? Like, without Steph Curry, the storylines have more been focused on the 76ers and some of these other teams, the Bucks, the Pacers, and the Cavaliers have been focused on a ton, the Raptors as well. So I felt like the Warriors, and you could even throw the Rockets in there, like the Warriors have flown under the radar, pulling off their series against the Spurs. So there was a lot of interesting storylines. It was a hell of a lot better of a first round than it was last year. So applause to the NBA for a little bit more parity than I think maybe we all thought coming into the playoffs so far.
Yeah, and it's not even over. Like I said, we got three game sixes tonight. Maybe we'll get ourselves at least one more game seven. Bucks Celtics game seven tomorrow night, and then of course the Pels and Warriors kicking off their second round series tomorrow night in the back end of that TNT doubleheader. Really excited for Pels Warriors. I think the biggest challenge and the biggest thing in the Pelicans' way as far as challenging the Warriors and maybe pushing them to a 6 or 7 game series is who on that Pelicans team is guarding KD. Because really nobody in this league can. He is that good offensively. So the Pelicans are going to need to have the same kind of dominant, you know, top tier performance from Jrue Holiday, and Rajon Rondo, their backcourt, and of course Anthony Davis. Hopefully he can continue to put his mark on these playoffs, and we're gonna go from here. But it's been amazingly entertaining so far, and you know, we've only scratched the surface.
We gotta take a short break here on Locked On Bulls. When we come back, want to take more of your mailbag questions. We've had a ton of questions this week, so we wanted to make sure we get all to everything that people have texted us in this week. We touched on a lot of things on our Wednesday episode, so if you didn't listen to that, I suggest you go back and listen to that Wednesday episode. That was a full hour, about 30, 35 minutes of just answering questions from texts, voicemails as well. So go back and listen to that. That's what we have planned for the rest of this episode. Stay right here on Locked On Bulls. We will be back in 60 seconds.
I don't get offended by being called the wrong name.
I do.
You do?
Yeah.
Who did they mistake you for?
I went to
Shrek.
That was really good. That was really good, man.
That was really good, man. Anthony was not laughing.
Yeah, he was laughing. So funny, right?
That was good, man. That was quick. It was good. It was quick. Hello. Who do you get?
All right, we are back. Before we take some mailbag questions, Matt, I got to bring this up because anytime the NBA is on TNT and we get the show between Kenny Smith and Charles Barkley and Shaq and Ernie, and like they just continue to pile it on as the best entertainment in sports right now. If we're talking about a show, a roundtable show, whether it's a debate style show on ESPN or wherever you get your content, hands down, this crew is phenomenal together. And I think you and I, when we were talking about this a little bit a couple weeks ago, I said, you know, is it unfair for me to say that I really hope Kenny Smith doesn't get the Knicks job because I don't want this crew to break up? Like, they were making fun of Shaq last night, and like the production crew, they were talking about Shaq like being mistaken for somebody else. Like when he's out on the street, they were like, you know, I hate when people call me the wrong name. And like Charles Barkley was like, who calls you the wrong name? Like, how do you get mistaken? Who do you get mistaken for? Shrek? And the production crew just started dying laughing, and Shaq, just like the carefreeness of their show and the naturality of the entire show is just, I think, perfect. So I don't know. Maybe there's other fans out there too, Bulls fans that like TNT or just like the NBA in general, like this style show. I'm a little biased when I say I really hope Kenny Smith doesn't get that next job so he stays in TV. Like, I know you can get another analyst to kind of fill in that role, and really Ernie, Shaq, and Charles are really the core of that TV show, but I think...
Yeah, but Kenny's the only one of the trio of former players who actually talks about basketball.
That is true. That is very true.
So, I mean, so that's my opinion. I used to hate that NBA on TNT crew. I couldn't stand them.
You are a hater.
I was just like, this is a... You know, a complete hodgepodge, disorganized jumble of guys just talking over each other and not talking actually about the basketball that they just watch, whether it's a halftime report or a post game. They don't talk basketball. And I eventually just got over that and accepted it for what it is. And now, yeah, I'm okay with it. It's just entertainment. It's not basketball analysis. It's just entertainment. But if Kenny were to leave, they would be losing the one part of that trio of former players that actually does know what he's talking about and can speak about basketball X's and O's and break down film the way he does eloquently. Because Shaq and Chuck and their little rivalry and their banter is a great element to that show, like you said. But I don't want to listen to Shaq and Chuck talking about basketball in the old days because they have the same six opinions, and they just try to word opinions, the same opinion differently to contradict one another. And so, yeah, that's entertainment value. But Kenny's the best of the bunch, and I have so much respect for Ernie Johnson because he does not have an easy job trying to wrangle those three and make those halftime reports and the postgame shows somewhat cohesive. And it's an added bonus. It's an added element to why I love the NBA playoffs, because once I got over the fact that it is not basketball analysis, I just accepted it for what it is. It's a lot of fun.
I think the coolest thing too, just real quick, is I remember listening to an interview with Ernie Johnson, and they were talking about sort of the behind the scenes of the show and whether or not he feels like he has to work harder than some of these other guys just to do what you said, to kind of like control the chaos going on the show. And what surprised me is he said that Shaquille O'Neal and Charles Barkley and Kenny Smith, well, obviously Kenny Smith and Charles Barkley had been around longer than Shaq as far as an analyst goes, but he said the determination that Shaq had to just get better at what he was doing on TV, and obviously he had sort of that stardom when he was playing too. He was Mr. Hollywood for a while, so he was a very personable guy, but he said he was very surprised at how serious he took the TV job and wanting to make this better. I'm with you too. I think Kenny Smith is one of the best in breaking down film, and that's why I'm saying, like, even if you were to take Kenny Smith out of that role and plug somebody else in, I don't know who you would do that with. All it takes is one person to kind of throw off that chemistry, and while they probably would make it work, it wouldn't be exactly what it is right now. And they've had a long time to try and build up this show, and it's only transformed into better. And so I think I'm with you, and I think a lot of people were a little bit irritated when this show first came out. But now it's evolved, and they've gotten so much better at mixing in the X's and O's with the entertainment value of a halftime show, because really that's part of the element too, is they do things differently that don't bore people. And like, you look at postgame shows around the league, like whether it's you're watching Bulls postgame show or you're watching postgame show on a national TV, it's sort of at times can be boring because it's the same sort of shtick. It's the same analysis. It's the same breakdown. And sometimes people tune out if they're not laughing or if they're not engaged in the content. So applause to the TNT crew. They are the best in the business, in any sport, really, for me at least.
Absolutely. And I would add, just as a final touch, that I am more and more loving Ian Eagle as an NBA play-by-play guy. I know he's done a lot of different stuff over his career, And he's just really, really good.
Adam Amin as well, on ESPN. He's a Chicago guy as well. He's been doing the Cavaliers Pacers series. He did a lot of college basketball, and I think he is one of the best up and coming broadcasters that's out there. And I think, like, just engagement wise and watching a basketball game and energy that they bring to plays that might not even need energy, I think that's very important for a broadcaster. And he's, like you said, I think a lot of the mixture of the old guys that everybody's used to listening to on a broadcast with the mix of some of these new guys, like you had said, it's pretty cool. And I think the broadcasting crews, for the most part, have been really good. I mean, they did send the, like, F crew to Toronto one game. Like, it was PJ Carlissimo and somebody else doing the game. And I was like, oh, God. I was like, somebody send a different crew out there. But for the most part, the broadcasting crew has been fantastic.
Yeah. And we even got Kevin Harlan cracking a joke in game 5 where he said, Reggie, Rose, when talking about Derek.
That's true. We didn't even talk about that.
Absolutely fantastic.
Like, I got thrown off so bad, and, like, I guess I just wasn't on Twitter when it was happening, but the first time I had heard him say that during the broadcast, I think as the game was progressing, he was sort of trolling Reggie Miller and fans out there by doing that, but I was like, did he really just say Reggie Rose just broke to the basket? Yeah. And I'm, like, thinking to myself, like, people who don't know Derrick Rose, like you and I do, or, like, the Bulls fans here know Derrick Rose, like, with his brother being Reggie. It was almost too perfect. It was just too perfect. Yeah,
it was
to
hilarious.
Ignore.
Bulls Twitter was absolutely losing its freaking mind, myself included. It was a lot of fun.
Too good.
All right, let's get to some more of these mailbags because we got a big overflow from Wednesday. Thanks again to everybody who's been sending us texts and voicemails. A lot of fun material. All right, Jordan, let's kick it off with this one. Pretty interesting. This one comes from the 917. My question for you is, how do you feel about Stanley Johnson to the Bulls for the Pelicans pick? Keep in mind, the Pistons might be the new Orlando Magic, if you know what I mean. Think about it. A young Stanley Johnson to pair with Chris Dunn. And that comes from Godwin at 917. Thanks for your question. Jordan, your thoughts?
So we talked about this at the trade deadline. You remember this when we were talking about Nico Mirotic and possibilities of where he would go. The Pistons seemed intrigued. That was before the Blake Griffin trade. And Stanley Johnson was one of those pieces that didn't seem to really fit. He didn't really have a role on that Pistons team. He was frustrated. Hey, look, he's a guy from Arizona that's been in the league for, what, 3 years? He's 22 years old. And outside of his rookie year, he's been kind of a disappointment for that Pistons team. I think that's more of a testament to the coaching staff and sort of the mishmash and the mess of what the Detroit Pistons are. Hey, man, look, at first round picks are valuable. I don't care where the first round pick is, especially with this Pelicans pick being in the latter half of the first round. But let's be honest here for a second. First round picks, especially in the NBA right now, one of the most valuable assets that you could possibly have as an organization. And I'm talking about, like, anywhere in football, in basketball, in baseball, in hockey. The NBA draft, having first-round picks, having multiple first-round picks, is one of the biggest assets you could have, especially as a rebuilding team. So I don't know if I'm in with trading a first-round pick for a guy like Stanley Johnson. I talked about it before with the Nico Mirotic thing, and, like, that was to the point of, if the Bulls weren't going to get a first round pick, then maybe you could acquire another asset. I don't know if he's worth a first round pick. Maybe they can figure out a deal that maybe would be advantageous to take on, like, a bad contract from that team in order to get Stanley Johnson. But right now, this is the first time the Bulls have had two first round picks in forever. So I would rather see what the scouting team can do in the late round, because look at, like, players we got in late in the first round, like Bobby Portis, and there's some other guys. OG Anunoby went late in the first round. Like, players are there. You can find very good value. And I'd rather do that than maybe trade away to a first round pick and in an unknown. And we grilled the Bulls for doing this multiple times, trading away picks. And that's the very last thing I want them to do. So I would say, like, no.
We're obviously disappointed that that's a 22nd pick as opposed to 14 if the Pelicans fell into the lottery. Even still, I agree with you. The value there is just too high to pass up. And look, Stanley Johnson's a decent player. And yes, the Bulls need a wing, but the Bulls need a 3-and-D wing. They need as many shooters on this roster as possible for Fred Hoiberg's system. And Stanley Johnson is no shooter. The guy career is a 37% field goal shooter. 37%. Downtown, 29%. I mean, what about that is enticing to a Fred Hoiberg run offense? To me, it's just not the value there. And then you look at his contract situation under team control for one more year, $3.9 million in the 2018-19 season, which is certainly a very affordable deal, but then he's a restricted free agent in 2019. So would you rather have a 3-and-D who can't shoot threes for 1 year or a team-controlled rookie deal guy that you take at the 22nd pick that's under team control for at least 4 years on a similar, if not cheaper, deal than that? To me, it's a no-brainer. Like, it's just not, it's not worth it. Trading away your second, your 22nd pick, the second of your two first-round picks, who you still might be able to get a steal on. Anything can happen with that pick, and you want to trade that away and the 4 years of team control for that player for 1 year of Stanley Johnson just doesn't make any sense.
I'm with you, too. So, like, I'm okay with the Bulls looking outside of the draft to try and acquire wings, especially maybe the younger players that other teams just don't see a fit for. I'm cool with that, but I don't know about trading away first round picks. Like I said, they're so valuable in the NBA, at least right now. If it's me, I would rather take that Pelicans pick and try to find a way to move up, if anything. But for me, yeah, I would agree with you. I think Stanley Johnson's very an interesting name and a very interesting player. But I don't know if I'm trading away that Pelicans pick, especially with, I'd rather see what the front office does here than trading away yet another pick and then having to go.
I mean, just think about it. That would be essentially trading Nico for Stanley Johnson. Like, are you really that excited about that being the result of the Nico trade?
Yeah.
At least with 22, there's an unknown. At least with 22, there's some optimism that this kid, whoever they take, might turn into somebody who's a real player for this rebuild. And again, as I said, team control for several years. That's a big key for John Paxson.
I agree. We got to take another short break here, but when we come back, we're going to finish up with all of your questions as well. So stay right here with the Locked On Bulls. We'll be right back in 60 seconds. All right, we're back again, taking a few more questions before we get out of here for the weekend. Matt, I got one from the 224 here. We're going to the NBA draft, actually staying at the NBA draft here as we talk about possible picks, and now we're looking at the Bulls lottery pick here, and it says, let's say the Bulls end up with a third pick through the lottery, assuming Ayton and Doncic are gone at 1 and 2. Who would you guys like them to take at 3, and who do you think the Bulls would take? So, Matt, I'm going to let you touch on this first.
That's interesting. So, I feel like we talked in our previous Mailbag Wednesday about if the Bulls, you know, luck themselves into the first or second pick. If it's 1, you know, you and I were talking, I think I'd shade towards DeAndre Ayton. You might take Luka. If you're 2, you take whichever one of those guys wasn't taken number 1. I think we're in agreement there. This is an interesting continuation of that, which is, say the Bulls luck themselves into the 3rd pick, and Luka and Ayton are gone 1-2. In that situation, I know that Paxson is talking about needing a wing, and I know this roster needs a wing, but I think that 3 is just too much. I think that's too early to take Mikal Bridges. Michael Porter Jr., maybe, but there is the injury risk there as well. Honestly, I might go with Jaren Jackson Jr. from Michigan State. I love that kid's abilities and what he projects to be at the NBA level with the modern big and the way that he can stretch the floor. A front court with Markkanen and Jaren Jackson Jr., I mean, I could really get behind that. I think that would be brilliant. So I think I might shade towards Jaren Jackson over Michael Porter if the Bulls get 3 and Ayton and Doncic are off the board. What about you?
So I guess my question for you, though, is if you take Jaren Jackson Jr. with that 3rd pick, how does he mesh into this Fred Hoiberg system? Because now you have Bobby Portis, you've got Lauri Markkanen, you've got Robin Lopez, and then you're adding Jaren Jackson Jr. You also have Cristiano Felicio there. Like, at some point, you're going to need somebody, you're going to have to ask somebody to play the 3. Like, I feel like that's kind of log jamming, and it kind of sucks to talk about that, considering,
well,
like,
but eliminate Robin Lopez and Cristiano Felicio from that log jam, because let's be real, Rolo's good is gone after this year,
sure,
most likely, and Felicio, despite that 4-year contract, is not looking like a piece that is going to stick around long term. So the logjam is really Markkanen, Portis, and then Jaren Jackson Jr. That's not much of a logjam.
Is it fair for me to throw out the idea that maybe the Bulls trade down?
Man, I don't know how. I mean, maybe if they only are trading down a few spots.
That's what I'm saying. Like if there's a team that really likes Jaren Jackson Jr. Or Marvin Bagley and wants to move up to three, we're talking about teams that, like, you would be leapfrogging teams like maybe Dallas or Atlanta or Orlando, Sacramento, or even Cleveland. If the Bulls really, like, they come into camp this May, work out Mikal Bridges, work out Michael Porter Jr., some of these other guys, and they have a feeling that, hey, maybe we can move down a couple spots, still pick Michael Porter Jr., Mikal Bridges, or maybe somebody else that we're not talking about at this moment, maybe they feel like they can move down and still acquire assets and still get the guy that they were looking for all along in this draft, because you still got Marvin Bagley there, which, to be honest with you, like, we're talking about my opinion personally. If we're talking about what the Bulls front office is going to do, that three pick, I hate to tell you, Matt, but if Marvin Bagley's still on the board at three, like we had said, like Ayton and Doncic are off the board, I think the Bulls are going to probably take Marvin Bagley there, just because they've been watching him all season long. We've heard reports that they really like Marvin Bagley's size, his skill, his ability. They've been scouting him all season, like they have been with all these others, but I feel like Marvin Bagley has been more closely tied if the Bulls were to get the top three or top four pick, outside of maybe Michael Porter Jr., who looks to be sliding a little bit. But I hate to tell you, if they don't move down, I think Marvin Bagley is their guy that they would take there at number three over Jaren Jackson Jr.
That would upset me greatly. I don't see it with Bagley, man. I just see so many holes in his game, and I feel like his NBA ceiling is not that high. You're probably not wrong, though. It's hard to pass up a guy like that, and he certainly has the size advantage over Jaren Jackson Jr. I just think that Jaren Jackson's game blends and fits a lot better with Fred Hoiberg if the Bulls want Hoiberg and that offensive system to continue to be the way that they structure this rebuild. To me, he's a better fit. But
I was just going to say, you know, the Bulls missed out on Draymond Green. What was that in that second round? And a lot of people are talking about Jaren Jackson Jr. being sort of that Draymond Green type of player. So maybe they do look at that, and he can play the five. I think my biggest concern for Marvin Bagley is his ability to play the five. If the Bulls draft him, they're going to want to pair him next to Lauri Markkanen. Now, is this guy at 19 who's 6'11", 7 feet tall, 235, is he big enough to be bodied around in playing the five and playing an open spread in space? Like, I have no problem with Fred Hoiberg being able to develop Marvin Bagley's offensive game. Marvin Bagley's a pure shot blocker, too. But for a lot of games, he was completely taken out of games for Duke this year because the defense clamped on him. The defense had two guys guarding him. He was getting nervous. He wasn't getting touches. And another knock on Marvin Bagley's game, and I hate to continue to criticize him, and I don't want people to feel like, maybe the Bulls, like, feel down on Marvin Bagley. The only other thing I will say about him is, you know, at times I saw him at Duke and it seemed like he was taking plays off, wasn't hard-nosed for all the minutes that he was in there, and maybe he was frustrated with the way he wasn't getting touches, and that could be part of it too. He did have an injury as well, so I don't know. There's a couple factors that make me a little bit worried, but I mean, taking a guy that's 19 years old at 6'11", was talked about at the beginning of the NCAA season as potential consensus number one overall pick. So I don't know. I think Jaren Jackson Jr., Marvin Bagley at number three, you could look at either one of those players. I'm pretty satisfied with either one of those and the way that they would fit. I think I have a little bit more concern, like you do, with Marvin Bagley, but I like both players a lot, and I think with time can develop with guys like Lauri Markkanen and even Chris Dunn too. So it'd be very interesting if the Bulls ended up in that top three and ended up with that third pick.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're you know, at least in the same ballpark there as far as what we'd like to see the Bulls do with that number three. All right, let's move on. This is an interesting one about the Bulls' backcourt situation. This comes to us from a 773 area code. I heard a quote from Hoiberg near the beginning of the season that David Nwaba isn't a point guard, so he wouldn't be playing him minutes there. That pissed me off. In the modern NBA, nearly every player can bring the ball up the court, so why not play Nwaba or even Valentine as a point guard for a bit and see what happens? Especially in a rebuilding year, I've always thought the point guard position was best to hide a player who can't shoot. What are your thoughts?
We've talked about this before, very early in the season this year, when the Bulls were struggling at 3-20, kind of trying to figure out what Denzel Valentine was going to be as a player. At this point, like, we can be honest with what the Bulls think that their backcourt is going to look like this coming into this year. It's going to be Chris Dunn. It's going to be Cameron Payne. And then they're going to try and mix in, I think, Zach LaVine as your guy bringing up the ball sometimes. And, like, they're going to have to find ways to incorporate David Nwaba and Denzel Valentine into this. But I don't think they're going to take anything away from Chris Dunn or Zach LaVine as part of the guy that brings the ball up. Sure, David Nwaba as a point guard, shooting guard, whatever you want to call him, a combo guard, sure, he could bring the ball up and play point. Sure, Denzel Valentine could do the same. But I don't know why that would irritate you, considering you have Chris Dunn, you've got Zach LaVine, guys that can bring the ball up, and then depending on if they take a wing or not, if they take a guy like, for example, Michael Porter Jr., he's another guy that can bring up the ball and command an offense. So I don't know. My question is why are you concerned with maybe what the backcourt looks like in terms of where they're positioned at? It's more so to me, I care about the minutes that they're getting on the floor and the guys that they're combined with to play in the five-man rotations. Like, to me, that's more important in the NBA now than actual physical positions, because for the most part, I feel like the NBA has gone away from positionless basketball, and we've seen it more and more with successful teams who are doing this. So I would say just don't get caught up in the whole, well, he's got to play point guard, he's got to play shooting guard, he's got to play the three, he's got to play the four. Like, I would say, yeah, not, don't get caught up in that. Get caught up in how many minutes he's playing and who's he's playing on the floor with and who's developing well together.
And I would also say that, to the point of, you know, this texter thinks that the point of the point guard position is to hide a player who can't shoot. That's just not true. I mean, you look at modern NBA, and the players who have blossomed and thrived and been stars at the point guard position who aren't true shooters, I mean, that's a short list, right? Ricky Rubio has done a good job developing his shot. He's actually shooting respectably from three-point range in this Jazz Thunder series. He's certainly not a shoot-first point guard, and he's just now coming into his own at, you know, what season is this for Rubio, like 6 or 7? Tony Parker, not a shoot-first point guard, definitely a pass-first point guard, but has been in a reliable, stable, sturdy Spurs system for like the better part of 20 years and has developed his shooting ability. Steve Nash, not a shoot-first point guard, definitely a pass-first point guard, but it's not like he couldn't shoot at all. Jason Kidd, I think, is probably the best example in recent NBA history of a guy who really wasn't much of a shooter, pass-first point guard. But in today's NBA, no, you want a point guard who can shoot. You want a point guard who can knock down that shot, i.e. Chris Paul. He's also a guy who's developed and was definitely more of a pass-first point guard and has now developed his shot and the range of his shot. And I'm sorry, but as much as I love David Nwaba as a hustle guy and he runs the floor aggressively in Hoiberg's system, he's a great defensive piece for the backcourt, he's not a great ball handler. He's not the guy you want bringing the ball up to court. And we've already established on this show countless times that Denzel Valentine is not a point guard in the NBA. He's just not. Doesn't have the athleticism to do it. And Fred feels very comfortable with what Denzel's role is moving forward, and that is a shooter coming off the bench. And he doesn't need to be bringing the ball up to court. So those are my thoughts on that.
Just real quick, David Nwaba, so in terms of position estimate for this season, played in 70 games, that's 1,600 minutes that he had. He only played 2% of those minutes at the point guard position this year. 77% of his minutes were at the shooting guard position and 21% at the small forward position. So obviously that should tell you all that you need to know about David Nwaba playing the point guard position. That's not really the Bulls' concern at this point, too. As long as Chris Dunn stays healthy, and I don't know what you're going to get out of campaign next year, but hopefully some competence. And remember, you still got Jerian Grant on the roster, too. It's like, not he's not gone either. So you still have three point guards on this team where, like, in a pinch, Cameron Payne and Jerian Grant, sure, they can be competent at times. But overall, I would say just don't be concerned with that, as more so as the way as Fred Hoiberg develops some of these guys and like positions that he's putting them in to be successful. So I would say just don't get so caught up on the positions, more so as the playing time and who they're playing with and how things are meshing as well. You brought up a good point too. I guess one person that I could think of that is sort of a younger player that is a pass first point guard is Lonzo Ball for the Lakers. I mean, the guy is an assist machine and he's a wonderful passer. He's the one that I'm going to be interested to see if he can develop his shot and his scoring game, because then you're talking about another player who would come to the NBA with a broke-ass shot that could maybe potentially turn into a shooter and a scorer. Another guy, too, the first pick overall last year in Markelle Fultz. The guy got an injury. It got weird. He got to a point where he couldn't even shoot a free throw. He couldn't shoot a shot past 7 feet. Like, he's a guy that is going to have to be a pass-first point guard. I know he was drafted more for his scoring abilities, but he's going to have to be a pass-first point guard too as well. Ben Simmons is another one. Like, if you consider Ben Simmons a point guard, you know, Ben Simmons is a pass-first player. He's a rebounder, and obviously Ben Simmons can soar, but he's not a shooter either. He's a guy that drives to the basket or kicks it out and looks for that pass first. So there's a lot of guys in the NBA that are pass-first point guards that I feel like, especially some of these young core guys, are going to develop into scorers. And so maybe, I don't know if their concern is with Chris Dunn and whether or not he can be a potential scoring point guard. And I can understand your skepticism there as well, because he shot 42% from the field and a sub 35% from three this year. So I don't know. I can see the concern in the inability to finish at the rim for Chris Dunn. Those are things that he's going to have to work on this summer. And so that's part of the reason why I'm excited to see what his development is in third year at the NBA.
Definitely. That's something that Paxson said himself about Dunn finishing around the rim. And like I agree with you. I think you and I both were pleasantly surprised from what we saw from Campaign and his 20 minutes per game after, you know, the All-Star break when they made those rotation changes. Pleasantly surprised. We certainly had our jokes at Cam's expense earlier in the season. But and again, it's not like I have a suddenly significantly larger expectation for who Campaign can be in the NBA, but I at least feel a little bit better about him being a backup point guard who doesn't completely suck. So I think that's the plan for what we've heard. That's the plan moving forward. It's Dunn as the starter, and Campaign's going to run the offense in that second unit, and Nwaba and Valentine will fit around that. And I think that's probably the most logical solution for everybody at this point.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can follow us on social media at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Hit us up, 331-979-1369, text and voicemail line. That's where we're getting all of these questions. We want to thank all the fans that are interacting with us out there. As a Bulls fan, if you're sitting there listening to the show and there's something you want to comment on, there's a question that you want answered, or something you want us to discuss here on the show, make sure you're sending us to us at 331-979-1369, and you always have the option to leave us a voicemail as well. We love voicemails, so send those in as well this weekend. Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, for Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation, have a wonderful weekend. Enjoy the NBA playoffs this weekend coming up. We will see you on Monday. Have a wonderful weekend. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
That was some good nuggets. Good thing somebody told you them.
That's not the first time you've said those are some good nuggets either. I guarantee you that.
Wow.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.